Ad Council.
Fishing the waters of the wild and wonderful, the bluegrass and beyond. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker. Brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods. Let Borders help you get outdoors. Now, here's your host, Cam Connors.
Good Saturday morning. Thank you so much for catching another episode of HLS, Hook, Line, and Sinker. I'm your host, Cam Connors. I mentioned this a couple of shows ago. There's been something like 6 West Virginia state record fish caught so far this year, which is a lot for just one year when you go back and actually start looking at the records. Throughout this past week, I kind of got to wondering about some of the old records and how long they've stood, and some of them are actually pretty old, and honestly, some of them are not as big as I would have expected. So if you're looking to break a state record fish this year, here's some that might be ripe for the pickings. Largemouth, of course, the length record was broken this year, but the weight record has stood since 1994 at 12.28 pounds. When it comes to smallie, record fish hasn't been reported since the 70s. Length was in 1976 at 25 and a half inches. Weight in 71 at 9 and 3 quarter pounds. Rock bass, there's only been one fish of record. It was from 1964 at 13.8 inches and just 1.75 pounds. Bluegill was last set in 86, 2 3/4 pounds. And length was back in 1964, 13 3/4 inches. Here you go. Here's one that definitely could be broken this year. Pumpkin seed, no state record on file. You could be the first person to break that one, considering there isn't one on file. Now, it does, however, specify that there's a required minimum of 9 inches for a state record pumpkin seed. So keep that in mind if that's one you're looking to do. The oldest standing record that I could find in West Virginia from 1954, and it's the record length for a freshwater drum, and that stands at 37 inches. So if you're going to be out on the water this year and you think you've caught a state record, be sure to contact the DNR, get it verified, and you can download that reporting form on the DNR.gov website. And, you know, whenever I think about it, I think that might be a goal of mine this year. I've decided I want to do something big in fishing this year. So I either want to break a state record, complete a slam towards my master angler title, or get as many of the trophy fish citations as I can. If you're unaware of what those last two are, the master angler or the trophy fish citations here in West Virginia, be sure to go check out the HLS podcast, last week's show, where I talk with David Wellman at the DNR. We get the scoop on those programs. But yeah, those are all challenging feats for a fisherman, and I think I'll be happy if I can complete at least one of those this year. Speaking of fishing goals, one of my big ones, you might say from my fishing bucket list, is to go saltwater fishing or surf fishing, pier fishing, deep sea fishing, something on the ocean. A little later on in the show today, I'm going to be talking with Justin Hoover and Marissa White. They run a land-based fishing charter down in Pensacola, Florida. We'll be talking about what a first-timer can expect to go surf fishing with them. Also on the show today, we'll have some tackle talk with Austin Simon. He is the owner and crafter of Deep Valley Nets. I met up with him at the Appalachian Fly Fishing Festival a couple weeks ago, and he's got some truly beautiful network. And then to start out the show today, we'll be talking conservation with Trout Unlimited, talking about what TU is accomplishing here in Appalachia with a project manager with the group, Ryan Cooper. But before we get into all of that, you know the drill. We got to look at our weekend's weather and water conditions for around the region. We'll start with those water conditions. The Coal River right here at home in St. Albans, it took a pretty good drop earlier this week. It went from a high of 74 degrees on this past Sunday and dipped down to about 68 that night. And it's been steadily climbing since then. We hit 75 degrees yesterday. However, rains throughout this weekend, I predict, could cool it back off some. Moving over eastward to the Elk, where it runs into the canal, that one took a drop off earlier in the week as well. Went from 75 on Sunday down to 68 that night. Warming back up through the week, though not as fast as the Coal has. It's currently setting at around 72, 73 degrees. Moving westward, talking about the Little Sandy River, my stomping grounds in Kentucky. Looks like they've opened and then closed the dam again throughout the week on Grayson Lake. Temps stayed in the high 60s, 68, 69 through last weekend. Then about midweek, it suddenly dropped just over a course of a couple of hours to a low of 62. And then Thursday morning shot right back up to 70 degrees. And that's about where we're floating at as we head into the weekend. Looking at the mighty Ohio, a slow and steady increase all week long, peaking out near 70 as we go into the weekend. As for the weather, today expected to be a little stormy here and there, but it should clear out for the most part throughout the afternoon to just cloudy with an occasional shower here and there. High of 83. Tonight, more of the same. Cloudy skies throughout the night. Scattered thunderstorms, a possibility for much of the region. Low of 69. Tomorrow, you guessed it, more rain, a possibility with scattered thunderstorms throughout the day and a high of 81. Hey, don't forget, the show is now on podcast. If you miss any of today's show or you want to listen to a previous episode, be sure to check it out on our website, wjypam.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Pandora, Spotify, Amazon Music, all your favorite streaming platforms. We are up there, and you can catch previous episodes. You can also connect with the show now on Facebook. We have our own Facebook page. Give us a like and follow at HLS Show. When we come back, conserving our waterways, I'm going to be talking with Ryan Cooper about the great work Trout Unlimited is doing across Appalachia and the country. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock. Border Sporting Goods, family-owned and operated for over 40 years, has the Tri-State's largest fishing selection, as well as a great archery department, with bows, arrows, and more. From the kids that shoot for their school teams to what mom and dad will need for their next hunting adventure, Borders carries major brands like Hoyt, Matthews, Ten Point, and Raven. Come shoot your next bow at Border Sporting Goods, 5876 U.S. Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky, and online at bordersportinggoods.com.
When your car is making a strange noise, no matter what it is, you can't just pretend it's not happening.
That's an interesting sound.
It's like your mental health. If you're struggling and feeling overwhelmed, it's important to do something about it. It can be as simple as talking to someone in your community or just taking a deep, calming breath when you need it. Nice. For mental health resources, check out loveyourmindtoday.org. At loveyourmindtoday.org, you'll find information that may help you get through a tough time. Things like tips for dealing with stress, how to navigate difficulties like financial worries, anger, substance use, and more. You can also find real stories of how people navigated their own mental health challenges. Because once you start to address the problem, you can go so much further. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Reels are streaming, lines are tight. We're back for Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock.
Today's show brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods. Find them on US 60 in Ashland, Kentucky. They are your home for Liberty Safes. They're also your one-stop shop for all of your hunting and fishing needs this season. Let Borders help you get outdoors. You can find them online, bordersportinggoods.com. I'm your host, Cam Connors. Welcome back to Hook, Line, and Sinker. And, you know, we all love to go fishing. That's the whole point of this show. Whether it's the tranquility of being out on the water, the thrill of the strike, the study and preparation that goes in the hunt of a muskie or a big bass, maybe even just the steady rhythm of casting a fly. Whatever it is that does it for you about fishing, in the words of my late grandmother, it wouldn't amount to a hill of beans if it wasn't for conservation efforts from some really great organizations. One such organization got to be Trout Unlimited. They're working to restore and protect waterways across the country. And joining me now to talk about Trout Unlimited's work in Appalachia, Ryan Cooper. Ryan, thanks for taking the time to talk today.
Hey, no problem. Appreciate you having me.
Oh, for sure. I appreciate you doing it. So for folks who may not be aware of Trout Unlimited, give us a little description of what you guys do and maybe a little history if you can. You know, tell us about the organization.
Yeah, sure. So Trout Unlimited, you know, started, I believe it was in the 60s. So they started, you know, as a group of guys that just wanted to conserve trout resources. And that's slowly spread throughout the whole nation. Now we're a nationwide organization that really focuses on wild and native trout fisheries and improving them. So specifically, you know, in West Virginia, the only native trout to the East Coast is the native brook trout. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of conservation value behind that. It's also West Virginia's state fish. That's why we're doing the work. And, you know, we've seen brook trout kind of declining over the years nationwide throughout their range. And so we're working to kind of have beneficial impacts towards improving their habitat and kind of reversing that trend.
Why would you say the mission is so important? What would happen if if no conservation efforts were being done? You know, how quickly do you think we would see the brook trout gone?
You know, a lot of these impacts are from human impacts. So deforestation, you know, getting equipment into the streams and kind of doing what we will to the landscape, straightening riverbeds out, and all these have negative impacts. So if it's totally unregulated, you know, these resources would diminish really quickly. We've seen impacts from historic flooding that we're trying to reverse, and Pendleton County specifically, West Virginia. You know, everybody talks about the flood of 85 and how that had so many crazy impacts on the watershed. And because of that, you know, they had equipment kind of dredge the channel straight, and now we have over-widened streams that are really impacting water temperatures. So you have over-widened channels with just small, really shallow depth. And
right,
yeah, it's void of habitat and the sun's just baking the water. So
right.
And with trout, they need cold water to thrive.
Exactly. A lot of people don't see how that could be a negative, but how the widening could be a negative, but you got to factor in only so much water is going to be coming through there, and the wider you make it, the shallower it's going to be. So again, that's going to heat the water up and definitely affect the trout. You know, cold water fish, you heat that water up, they're not going to be able to survive there.
Exactly, yeah. And also from a predator standpoint, they're just overexposed in that big flat area, and they can be picked off by birds and other types of predators as well really easily. So it's just a negative all the way around. Also, we see a lot of like berms built up around streams, and all that does is concentrate the flow in a high water event to where you get more velocity. And that actually does more damage to the stream banks and the landowner's property. They're building these berms to try to protect their land, but in a really severe flood event, it's going to do the exact opposite and actually tear away more stream banks once it breaches those berms.
Yep.
So the idea is to reconnect the stream to the floodplain. It's, you know, the big flat valley bottom, so the water can spread out and actually lose energy and also deposit that good fluvial sediment and soil that and more nutrients into the river bottom, so you know the crops grow better, everything like that. But it's just important to have, like, you know, streams with a natural channel that haven't been altered by humans and have a natural pattern and kind of meandering stream channel, so it loses that velocity naturally, has better habitat for the fish. Also have a good tree cover on the banks, so we call that a riparian buffer, but that shades the stream, lowers water temperatures, also protects the banks and holds together the soil with all those roots and everything. So it's great habitat for everything, not just fish, you know, terrestrial wildlife, deer, birds, everything like that benefits from riparian habitat too. But unfortunately, we see a lot of the opposite, like I said, just straight streams that were dredged with equipment and void of trees. So we're trying to, you know, reduce or kind of reverse that trend.
Yeah, absolutely. All those are going to have major effects on the ecosystem at large. And like you said, it's not just the fish in the water, but it's also going to affect, you know, the critters, the deer, the rabbit. It's going to affect all the life that are reliant on that potential, that stream, that area. So you mentioned one just a second ago. What are some other projects that Trout Unlimited has done here in Appalachia?
Yeah, so we focus on, obviously, stream restoration work, where we actually build habitat for brook trout and with using rock and log structures and kind of creating those natural meanders back into the stream pattern and profile. But also, you know, tree plantings, you know, reforest the riparian buffer areas. And then livestock exclusion fencing is another big one. So we'll help farmers out with actually excluding the water source, but providing an even better alternative water for them. So, you know, a lot of, especially some of the smaller streams, the livestock have pretty limited access to water. Even though it's unrestricted to the stream, there might be like a single large puddle or pool where the livestock concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the best for livestock. They kind of go down the stream bank and then bend way over to drink. And it's a lot of effort. It doesn't sound like a lot, but for a large, you know, say cattle, it's a lot of effort. And they actually have better growth potential if you use an off-stream water source like a trough, where they don't have to bend over and they have unlimited, you know, access to water.
Right. It's going to put less stress on the animals over time, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly. Yep. So, yeah, we provide those alternative water sources. And then, so that's like the basics of a livestock production. And then another project type we work on is aquatic organism passage barriers. So, you know, if you can imagine, we call them perched culverts, but a small culvert that is kind of has a big drop off the end of the pipe, like a waterfall. Mm-hmm. We pull those out because the fish can't make it up into these headwater systems where they spawn and reproduce. So we pull out that culvert and then the span bridge structure over it. So it's just totally unimpeding, and the fish can move freely back and forth.
Okay. So you mentioned a little bit ago about one of the projects that you all focus on is rebuilding trout habitats using, you know, rocks and logs and stream meandering. And so what all goes into that kind of a project?
Yeah. So we have stream designers on staff that kind of look at the impacted stretch, and then we'll use reference sites in the watershed. So maybe upstream or downstream, it looks more natural, kind of what the stream wants to be. Mm-hmm. And we'll try to just kind of copy and paste that, for lack of better terms. You know, the designers, they go through a lot of, you know, steps with engineering and things and coming up with these designs. But we try to get the proper slope and, you know, pool to pool spacing and, riffle to riffle spacing, things like that. And then adding overhead cover as well. So we'll actually use, we'll push over trees that are outside the riparian area, maybe off the top of a hill or something, or maybe a landowner's had a logging job recently, and we'll repurpose some root wads and actually bury those into the stream bank so they won't move. So the trunk's buried in kind of perpendicular to the stream, but then the root wad's exposed, and that creates like an undercut, place for the fish to sit, and also for, you know, we call them benthic macroinvertebrates, but little bugs that the fish feed on, they live there too, and provides just all kinds of habitat. So instead of an overwidened channel, they have a place to live there under the root wads, a deeper pool habitat, kind of riffle pool instead of just one long riffle, you know, just that complexity of habitat that allows the fish to thrive.
Make it as natural as possible.
Yeah, yeah. The idea, we do natural stream channel restoration, so it's natural channel design, meaning, you know, in 5 or 10 years, the idea is to look like it's totally natural, like humans didn't put it in there, but it's also stabilized so it won't move.
So what kind of success have you seen with some of these projects?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd say on average, you know, there might be a little, not a dip, but you might not see the fish respond immediately that year, but we do electrofishing surveys. Basically, that's where we go through with a low-frequency electrofisher unit on our backs, and it emits a low frequency electricity into the water that just temporarily stuns the fish. You net them real quick, and we just take some counts and measurements and let them go. But we do that annually on all our projects, and usually look at like the 5-year trend. So we sample each year, pre-construction and post-construction for 5 years. Basically, what we're seeing is the fish love wood. That's like the biggest thing. Brook trout love wood. Mm-hmm. We, you know, I always say if you want brook trout, just add wood. And for whatever reason, that's just what they're used to living in, and it provides a lot of food and cover for them. So, for whatever reason, they like wood even more than rock, but we use kind of a mixture of both for complexity. And we see the fish respond really positively to it. You know, some projects have jumped up, populations have jumped, you know, double, triple of what the pre-construction data looked like. And with specifically bridge projects, sometimes where the upper reaches of a stream are totally void of brook trout because they just can't physically make it up through that culvert pipe. So when we pull that out, you know, it's immediate. The fish immediately start moving up into those headwater sections. So areas that previously were kind of cut off a hard cutoff for brook trout. They can now move up through there. And historically, they've been there. You know, it's just that a bridge might have cut them off, and then, you know, whatever happened upstream, negative impacts from like drought or whatever, where they couldn't come back downstream to the main river, you know, that area then becomes void because the fish either died or moved out of there during drought conditions. So, yeah, that's what we're seeing. It's all really positive stuff. We're seeing, you know, less erosion where we plant trees. Once a tree gets established for, you know, about 5 years or so, sycamore trees really grow to mm-hmm. the potential of stabilizing stream banks and leafing out and actually reducing water temperatures. So
what kind of, I don't know if you would know anything about this, but, you know, what kind of future projects would you say are in the works, or what is Trout Unlimited looking to in the future as far as Appalachia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Kentucky? Are there any projects on the horizon that you guys are looking at, and it's, you know, that's our next big project? Is there anything like that coming mm-hmm. up?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's kind of more of what I've been talking about, but it's trying to target those private lands that are having a big impact on the water system. You know, we can work on public lands pretty freely, but brook trout don't understand, you know, property boundaries.
Right.
So it's important to kind of seamlessly work across private and public. And we've been doing that really well in West Virginia, but I think it's just more of that and getting the knowledge out to landowners and letting them know that, hey, you know, these programs exist. And a lot of times we partner with the Natural Resource Conservation Service, NRCS, and they have additional federal funding for landowners. So if you have an NRCS contract within a brook trout watershed for this type of work, TU will partner up with that and basically cover your extra costs with our grant funding. So there's no out-of-pocket costs for the landowner, which is pretty incredible. I mean, you're basically getting some really serious conservation work. And if you're a farmer, you're getting fencing and water troughs that improve your operation basically free of charge.
That is awesome.
So yeah, that's kind of our selling point. And we're trying to just expand that template of conservation throughout Appalachia. So that's the name of the game for us. And that's, you know, we probably have a docket of, you know, 25 to 30 ongoing projects, you know, that are in different phases and things. So just in West Virginia, and that number, you know, is much larger throughout the whole Appalachia region. So,
right. And then of course, this being a nationwide organization, you guys are tackling hundreds mm-hmm. of things all across the country. So really great work.
Oh yeah.
If folks want to get involved, what can they do? I'm sure they can donate. Can they volunteer? What all can they do in the way of helping in the mission Trout Unlimited has set out?
Yeah. So, you know, you can go to tu.org and become a member. I think it's $35 annual fee. And basically you get, like their trout magazine and some other stuff throughout the year. And that portion of that goes to help conservation and fund staff and things like that who are doing this work. You can obviously, there's a button to donate more, become a life member. You can kind of pick whatever you'd like to donate there. If you wanted to, you can contact, you know, our West Virginia staff or any other program where you live and donate to them directly. That's probably the most beneficial way of donating, you know, to that specific program where you live if you want to see a change in your area. And they could contact me or any of the other staff, you know, the full-time staff through the TU National folks if they want to put money towards a specific project. And, of course, there's chapters, TU chapters throughout the nation where you can join and become like an active member. And whenever you join TU, it'll tell you the closest chapter to you. And they usually have monthly meetings, and those folks try to get out and do some conservation work themselves as well. I'd say mostly it's, you know, avid fly fishers, but, you know, TU is open to anybody.
Ryan, I appreciate you taking the time to talk today, and you guys doing some amazing work. So keep it up.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Hey, coming up after the break, I spent some time at Nitro's Ridenour Lake this week, and I got a new perspective on it. I'll tell you what I mean up next. Plus, Tackle Talk, featuring yet another Appalachian-based gear maker, Deep Valley Nets. That's coming up next on HLS.
Porter Sporting Goods is your one-stop outdoor sporting goods store. Family-owned and operated for over 40 years, Porter's is the Tri-State's number one outlet for Liberty Safes. Proudly made in the USA with a lifetime warranty. A Liberty Safe will protect what's most important to you from theft or fire. Online at BorderSportingGoods.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram at Borders Sporting Goods. Borders Sporting Goods, 5876 U.S. Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Fish on. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock.
So a few episodes back, I talked with the Mountain State Kayak Anglers Club. And that paired with the Tour de Cole coming up going on right now, actually. It inspired me to break out my my kayak. And, of course, being a broke radio personality, I've been kayak fishing on and off for over a decade now. And so I decided to this week, I drug it out from under the deck out back of the house. I cleaned it up because it was a little dirty and packed it up, brought it with me to work and hit up some places after work. Now, this week I chose Ridenour, and I chose it for a few different reasons. First, you know, they've got that super convenient kayak launching dock. And I mean, that thing is absolutely perfect. I mean, every lake, every river, everywhere, what have you, should have one of those things. I love it. It is awesome. But I digress. I also chose Ridenour because it is close to work, which means I can get there really quick after I get off work to maximize my time out there fishing. And finally, the only thing that I've ever really caught there is trout and panfish. I've never landed a bass, a cat, a crappie. And so I'd been told by a few different folks that there are indeed some decent-sized bass in Ridenour Lake. And so that was kind of my mission this week, was I set out, I wanted to catch a decent bass. So Tuesday evening was my first trip out. To be honest with you, it was a big fat bust. I paddled all over the lake. I went back towards the trails, back towards, I guess, what they call the dog park, back over to the other side where I guess there used to be an island, but now it's all pretty grown up. Went back and forth all over, casting everywhere. I'd been told by someone, actually Tuesday afternoon on my way to the lake, that the bass had been hitting really hard on topwaters. So that was kind of my main focus for Tuesday. Topwater spinners, buzzbaits, poppers. I even threw a frog, even though there's not a lot of lily pads. I also did a little bit of fishing with a creature, Texas rigged. I used a shallow wrap. And again, just nothing the whole time I was out there. 2.5 hours and just not a single bite on Tuesday. So now, I will say that day the weather was a little wonky. We had a pretty hard downpour of rain just about an hour or so before I got out on the lake. So I thought, you know, maybe that had killed off the bite for the evening. And so I decided to go back on Wednesday evening. This time I took a few more lures, both a black and chartreuse buzzbait. A black and blue jig as well, and a white and chartreuse chatterbait, a frog, a popper, a jitterbug, a few different things. And wouldn't you know it, same result. And another guy that evening I was actually talking to, he was there fishing kind of off of a point. There was a down tree, some structure in the water, and he was fishing off of the bank there, off of the backside, kind of back by the trails. And he said the exact same thing, that he threw every lure he had brought with him and not a nibble one. So now, I don't claim to be a professional fisherman. I'm just a guy who really, really loves to fish. I do it every day if I had the chance. So I'm not a professional by any stretch of the imagination, but two straight days, 2 to 3 hours each on the water, fishing multiple spots, multiple lures, multiple methods, I'm inclined to say that maybe that lake is a little overfished. Maybe there isn't enough structure. Maybe there's not an, maybe there's not a ton of bass in there the way people had acted like there was that they told me. I will say there's a little bit of vegetation, but there's practically no lily pads. And the far end of the lake, incredibly shallow, like only a foot deep for a lot of the far end. So maybe it's just, you know, not a great bass lake. I know the lake is managed by the city. They stock it with catfish. They stock it with trout. And as I said earlier, that's actually all I've ever caught there, trout and bluegill. And both days, Tuesday and Wednesday, I actually did end up throwing out a bobber line and catching, you know, some bluegill here and there. So I'm going to say Ridenour, a nice little lake if you just want to go out and take the kids, do some casual fishing. Maybe even a better lake if you're looking for, you know, some catfish. I don't know. I haven't targeted cat there yet. But from a bass fishing perspective, I'm going to say that you're going to be better off going somewhere else. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you've had tons of luck there. And if you have, please drop me a line. Please tell me about it. Tell me how you did it. WJYPAM.com. Head over to the Hook, Line, and Sinker page. You can fill out that contact form and let me know. Moving on with the show for Tackle Talk today. I'll be talking again with someone that I actually met at the Appalachian Fly Fishing Festival a couple of weeks ago. And I'd actually heard of them before. I've been doing some research and looking at all the Appalachian-based gear producers that I can. And this one popped up, Deep Valley Nets. Now, I don't care what you're fishing for. If it's trout, largemouth, smallmouth, catfish, muskie, one of the most invaluable pieces of gear that you should definitely invest in is a good net. On the line with me now, Austin Simon, the one-man band that is Deep Valley Nets. Austin, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
So I've seen your stuff on social media, and then actually saw you set up at the Appalachian Fly Fishing Festival a couple weeks ago, and you got some very, very beautiful-looking nets.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So tell me a little about yourself. How did you you know, get into making nets?
Well, I've always done construction, so I've been around woodworking and different things as far as that. So I've always had an interest in doing things with wood. Actually, my twin brother, he started a net. He watched a YouTube video and he made one. And of course, I wanted to attempt to make one. So I did that and just kind of kept playing around with it, trying different things, making different molds, experimenting with the epoxy. The nets itself, the loop, I would soak in water in a PVC tube. Mm-hmm. That would take a day usually to form. But then I ended up watching, learning, found out that I built my own steam box. And actually, I only use the steamers that you use that you take down wallpaper with.
Right.
That's what I use to steam bend the loops. As far as the handles, we go to a place up in Ohio, Sugar Creek. They've got a place up there called Time Lumber. They've got every species of wood you can think of all the way from Africa. So we also incorporate some of those different species of woods into the nets as well.
It's very exotic and diverse materials, you, I guess you could say.
Yes. With the epoxy, it's kind of endless. Use the live edge, and then you can inlay personal flies that people have given me that they tie. You can inlay, like I've done the West Virginia symbol. I've done Marine coins, Army coins that people have given me from the Marine Corps, Army. You can kind of experiment, create your own net. I can do different handle lengths. The handles can vary from 6 inches up to 2 foot long, whatever you like. The netting is that rubber material, which is very easy on the fish, good for trout fishing as well.
So you do take custom orders then?
Yeah. So actually at the fly fishing festival, I had two gentlemen that they wanted custom handle lengths, different colors. They can either get on my website at deepvalleynets.com. They can get on my social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram. They can message me, text me. My phone number's on there as well. And they can break down to where if they want live edge with epoxy, if they just want exotic woods. Like I said, the handle wings, I do two different loop sizes. One size is bigger than the other. One's for more smaller trout, native type fishing. The other is more for your bass, bigger trout.
Okay. That was going to be one of my next questions, is if you did solely trout or if you did do bigger loops for, you know, like you said, bass and bigger fish. So that's good to know.
Yeah, the loop size, I think, is roughly 17 by 12, and it's a deep net, so you can fit decent-sized fish in it.
Perfect. So if someone is going to do a custom order, what's that going to do to the price? I know the stuff on your online store typically floats between the $100 and $200 range. Is a custom?
Honestly, price typically stays the same. Now, if I go to inlay several things that they would want inlaid, I usually just do a $20 markup. But the prices are... typically stay the same.
Well, that's a very reasonable markup, I would say, you know, for a custom made net.
Oh, for sure. And it's one of a kind. You're not gonna have one on the stream like it.
Exactly. And I've said it before, you know, one of the most valuable pieces of gear you can have, whether you're on a boat, a lake, a stream, a farm pond, a net can be one of the most valuable pieces of gear in your tackle.
For sure.
So, you know, you said, you know, you do take those custom orders. You do have a few things on the website. I saw some stuff with you there at the Fly Fishing Festival. Absolutely beautiful. I mean, the resin, the colors, the live edge, the different woods you're using, just absolutely beautiful stuff. And that folks can find it online. Are you putting any of your nets in stores, or are you only available online?
I'm mostly online right now. Actually, there at this show, I had a gentleman come up to me. He's got he said one of the biggest outdoor stores there in West Virginia, Williams. I think Williamstown is where he's at.
Right.
I cannot think of the store off the top of my head, but he said for me to come visit there and to get me put in there. The gentleman from Luxury Harmon's Cabin, he said about putting some nets in there. So we eventually like to start getting into some stores, but we just mainly do a lot of customs and just outbuild some and put them on my site.
You're still in the building phase. You do want to move into stores eventually, but at the moment you're more on the custom and whatever extras you get built go onto the website kind of thing.
Yeah, correct. But no, stores would be an awesome thing, and then it would also get my name out there and show people more, and they can see them in person.
Well, I think it's a great idea. I mean, like I said, the craftsmanship that I saw on your nets there at the Fly Fishing Festival, I mean, if I had had an extra 130 on me, I would have bought that. There was one with a green resin with a live edge, and the wood had almost like a reddish...
Yeah,
that was beautiful. I mean, I would have bought that one on the spot.
I appreciate that.
I just didn't have that money on me that day. And
yeah.
My wife was with me too.
Yeah,
and she tends to frown on me spending that amount of money at one time.
Yep.
But
yeah, it's been a process. I've definitely learned and made forms that work best, and I've found the epoxy that works best. It's called liquid glass. It's a 3-day cure process, which takes some time, but it allows all the air bubbles to evaporate and to really soak into the wood.
Okay, so that actually leads into the next question that I was going to ask, was what kind of turnaround time are you looking at on building a custom net? You said a 3-day setup.
Yeah, I usually say give me 3 weeks, because I do this on the side.
Right.
So 3 weeks would be a good comfort spot.
Okay, plenty of time to so that you can, you know, work on it, like you said, on the side, because, you know, this is not your primary day job, but it is, you know, we'll say a side hustle that you're very good at.
Correct, and thank you.
And so... if someone wants to do a custom net, they're gonna. What's the best way to reach you?
They can reach me at my phone number, which is 304-625-1274. Instagram is Deep Valley Nets. Facebook is also Deep Valley Nets. And then my website is deepvalleynets.com.
And I highly recommend folks go check that out and give you a follow. If nothing else, just to see the beautiful work that you're doing, because I'm blown away. I mean, you go to, you know, any of these sporting goods shops and you see nets that are, you know, $60, $80, $90, $110, and they're these mass produced nets. They're, you know, they've got, you know, 15 of them hanging on the rack, and they're all super expensive. And it's like, there's nothing special about them, you know, and there's no, correct, there's no craftsmanship in them. But then I go up to the festival, or I look on Facebook, and I see the stuff you're producing. It's just a little bit more expensive, honestly, on the same price range as a lot of it. And
yes,
and it, the craftsman and the beauty that goes into it and the uniqueness, like you said a little bit earlier, I mean, even the ones that you've, you know, cranked out and have for sale on your website, they're all one of a kind. Even if, you know, they've all got, you know, green epoxy with a live edge, they're all going to look a little different. So
yeah, they all have a different unique to them.
Exactly. So
there's not one that's the same.
You're going to be the only person out on the stream with that,
yep,
net. So that's, to me, that's something that's worth what you're putting into it, what you're asking for. I think that it's really some great work. I'm honestly going to be buying one. If not me, I'm going to have my wife get it for me very soon, like for my birthday or something, because I genuinely really
yeah, actually, there at the festival, a gentleman who's actually, him and his son, they have got three nets off of me. Every year they come to the festival and see, they end up taking a net with them. Well, he went back and told his wife, he said, you know, Father's Day is right around the corner. Sure enough, she came down and got the other net that he wanted.
Well, hey, that's awesome. Before we get off here, is there anything else that you want to let folks know about as far as getting a hold of you before we wrap up, this just popped in my head, and I don't know if this is something, like you said, where it's a side hustle still. I don't know if this is something that you have thought about or considered, but you know, gear does tend to break sometimes. Have you considered,
correct,
any kind of a warranty? Do you, what do you do if somebody, you know, gets a net from you and, you know, 2 weeks later there's a problem of some kind?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have had one net break in shipping. The box was beat up. Now, that was not the person's fault. So I said, that's fine. If you can ship it back to me, I fixed it, made it look brand new, shipped it right back, no cost at all. They just paid for the shipping. And then if something were to happen to a net, and it would be manufacturer, my fault, you get it shipped back to me, I'll fix it free of charge and get it right back to you. Right. And also, I had a gentleman, he bought a net for his dad. He lives in Florida. Where in Florida, there's a lot of different species of fish that have very razor-sharp teeth. Well, some of the fish they caught ended up biting through some of that netting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he shipped it to me. All I ask is you pay for the net, which is around $18. I'll sew it back on and I'll ship it right back to you.
Oh, that's awesome. So not only, so you have a, we'll say a warranty over manufacturer defect. If there's anything that happens to go wrong with it as a matter of something that, you know, was in the manufacturing process, you'll take care,
yes,
of that. But then
absolutely,
also, if it's damaged, say, like you said, by a fish with, you know, sharp teeth, you know, pike, muskie, anything from down south, you will work on it. They just got to send it back to you and pay for the parts.
Yeah, just pay for the net and the part, and then I'll do the work for free and get it sent back out to you.
That is absolutely awesome. Well, Austin, man, I appreciate you taking the time to talk today. Again, what's your website, your Facebook, you know, the places folks can find you?
Yeah, deepvalleynets.com, and then all social media, just type in Deep Valley Nets and you'll find me.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate, again, you taking the time to talk today, and I highly recommend folks go check you out.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me on, and I really appreciate it.
Still to come, summer is practically here, and if you're going to be headed to the beach this year, maybe you want to do a little saltwater fishing. I know it's on my bucket list. I'll be chatting with a beach-based guide out of Pensacola, Florida, to talk about what to expect for first-timers. This is Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock. Border Sporting Goods, family-owned and operated for over 40 years, is the one-stop shop for all your fishing needs. Borders has the largest selection in the tri-state from all the major brands, like Shimano, G. Loomis, Abu Garcia, Blue Rock Custom Tackle, Rapala, NetBait, Strike King, and more. Let the experts at Borders help you find the perfect fishing gear for your next adventure. Border Sporting Goods, 5876 U.S. Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky, and online at bordersportinggoods.com.
From the local 2U studio, connecting West Virginia, this is the Valley Sports Station, 105.5 and 98.3 FM, 1300 and 1340 AM, The Jock.
You said you'd never buy your kid candy from the checkout aisle, or forget extra diapers, and never give in to a meltdown. You'd never lick your thumb to clean their face, never let them have too much screen time, and never bribe them for just one more bite. You say you'd never let them out in public without their hair brushed, never ever become a minivan mom, and you'd never give them your phone for a quiet dinner.
Calling boss, work phone.
So when you say you'd never leave your child in a hot car, no, it can happen. Cars get hot fast, and kids can be at risk in temperatures as low as 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Never happens. Before you leave the car, always stop, look, lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Fishtails, we've got them. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on The Jock.
Today's show brought to you by Border Sporting Goods. Find them on U.S. Route 60 in Ashland, Kentucky. Your one-stop shop for all of your fishing and hunting needs this season. Let Borders help you get outdoors. Find them online, BordersSportingGoods.com. As we wrap up the show today, vacation season is just about here. A lot of folks, of course, going to be headed down to the beach. And if you're anything like me, one of those items on your bucket list is to do some salt water, some ocean fishing of some kind, whether it be off a pier, off a boat, off a beach, doesn't matter, because I've never done any of it, and I really, really would like to. And it just so happens that a friend of mine here in St. Albans named Gary, his daughter, is a saltwater fishing guide. She does it all the time down in Florida. She's a part of Justin Hoover Land-Based Fishing, and Gary recommended that I reach out to them, so I did. They are out of Pensacola, Florida. Joining me now is Justin and Marissa to talk about everything that they do. How you guys doing?
Hey there. How's it going, Cam?
It's going great. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this today. So let's jump right in. Justin, how did you get into the guiding business?
Well, I've actually kind of become a local down here in Northwest Florida. I moved here back in 2018. And ever since then, I've kind of just been a regular surf fisherman out on the beach. So in time, I just have kind of mastered all the little different techniques and skills that you need to kind of regularly find the fish while you're out there.
Okay. And where are you from originally?
So I'm from Northern Virginia, right in Fairfax County, just outside of the Washington, D.C. area.
So have you been fishing like all of your life, or how did you get into doing that when you got there?
Yeah, growing up in Northern Virginia, I kind of fished on a lot of the rivers there, kind of like the Chesapeake watersheds, they call it.
Yep.
So, just growing up all the time, we kind of had a river house down there in the northern neck of Virginia. So I kind of went there all summer growing up as a kid. So a lot of fishing on John boats and Carolina skiffs and a lot of crabbing as well. So and that as a kid, you know, once I got down here, you know, figuring out how to saltwater fish, you know, especially from the beach, kind of became my number one thing to do.
That was actually going to be my next question, is what was the transition like going from freshwater to saltwater? Did you have a lot of help? Did you figure it out on your own?
Honestly, a lot of the stuff you see on the internet, like the YouTube videos, there's a lot of local content creators that really give you a how-to approach on how to learn how to surf fish. So I kind of dabbled with that for like my first 6 months. And as I picked up techniques and added to them, I actually kind of became a bit of a creator myself. So I'm always, you know, putting out how-tos and helpful hints you know, and approaches to successfully surf fish as I learn how to do it better, you know, along the way.
Right. I've seen a lot of your content. You and Marissa both have some really great content, and we'll get to that towards the later on in the interview. Moving on, though, what I know you target pompano mostly. Is that your main fish target, or do you go after others as well?
Well, I do love the pompano fish, so I'm always targeting pompano, but we do target a lot of other fish as well. We catch a lot of really big drum, the red drum and the black drum. We call them the red drum, we just call redfish down here. And the black drum, they're really the big ones we call big uglies. And both of those we tend to catch a lot of as well, especially in the fall and wintertime. Now, so we do have a lot of fun targeting those also.
Actually, I think I saw a video of yours the other day talking about, I believe you had caught a drum on a pompano rig, and you were saying you had to be really careful because they would basically destroy the rig. Is that right?
Yeah, so we do make our own rigs, and our pompano rigs are real lightweight because they're such finicky fish. They're normally like 15 to 20-pound leader lines. So, yeah, when we get a big drum on that's over 30, 40 pounds, you know, he can just break that rig in an instant if you were to pull against him at all.
Right.
So there's a real matador approach that we take where we kind of just coax them in and work them in with the current, you know. And it's a lot of fun. You know, it gets tricky out there, though. Sometimes when we're on those drum, we'll catch like 10 to 15 of them in like a three-hour window.
So I've talked about it a little bit there at the top of the interview, how I've never done any saltwater fishing. So and I'm sure a lot of our listeners haven't either but would like to. So let's walk through if somebody, you know, has never done it before, they're going on vacation, they wind up in Pensacola, they connect with you and want to go out for the first time, you know, walk me through that. What's it going to be like?
Well, what's really good about it is, you know, our charters are very hands-on. You know, there's a lot of things with surf fishing that can be intimidating in the beginning. Like one thing, we use tall rods, you know, because we have to stay above the wave break. A lot of times when we go out and start our charters, you know, I bait all the gear. I cast out all the gear. You know, I more so teach an approach on the fishing until they want to step in and fish. So sometimes some of my charters go to where Marissa and I, we bait the gear, we cast out the gear, we get the fish on, and then, you know, the families just jump in and reel in the fish. We kind of build from there. You know, some families have anglers that have an interest in learning how to cast and learning how to properly bait the hooks, how we do. But we don't put that pressure on to make them have to be doing that right out of the gate. It's very, you know, just build from where their interest is, you know, as a family. A lot of kids that we take fishing, they've never fished before. It's their first time. So just showing them the experience of what it feels like to have a fish on the line, you know, is sometimes just the goal for the family. And we build from that. You know, it's amazing that Marissa likes the sight cast. So sometimes they'll come out, you know, expecting just to reel in a few fish on some set rigs. And then after a couple hours, they have the little kids down the beach, you know, throwing, you know, little ES lures, reeling in, you know, bluefish or bonita, mm-hmm. you know, as they're coming along. So it's really exciting.
So if somebody were to connect with you and set up, say, a 4-hour, 6-hour, however long your charters are, day long, what's the likelihood of walking away with some fish?
Oh, yeah, we pretty much, like, our last 6 charters we've ran, I think we've caught over 20 fish on every charter.
Oh, wow, that's
and
great.
It's like we'll catch pompano. We'll catch Spanish mackerel. We catch bluefish. We do have a bycatch of like ladyfish and blue runners, which are fun to catch, but they are more so of like a bait fish. But the ladyfish are like, we catch some over like 25 inches. They're huge and they kind of jump out of the water like tarpon. So I call them the getting kids hooked on fishing fish. You know, the ladyfish, you know, they'll catch 10 of them in, you know, less than 30 minutes sometimes.
Right. Well, I think I talked to you the other day whenever we were talking about setting up the interview, and you mentioned that your service is all-inclusive. Like, you also include how to clean the catch and stuff like that.
Yes, we do. I actually do clean the fish, you know, as requested, or sometimes, you know, Dad likes to clean them, so he just needs a thorough explanation on how to clean the particular fish we've caught. So I always, you know, go over all of that. And, you know, we also bleed our fish while we catch them. So if we're going to harvest them, you know, we bleed them out in a bucket along with then putting them on ice, you know, so we make sure the catch is good and fresh, you know. And a lot of times my families that I do charters on, they're staying within, you know, a couple miles from where I actually live. So I tend to take the catch home and clean them and then kind of return them back, you know, the next day to them while they're still on their week vacation.
Okay. It was very, very inclusive package you got going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a land-based fishing excursion, I kind of call it, you know, and we tailor it to the family. You know, we actually do use a fishing drone as well. So some families that have an interest in shark fishing, in getting out there after dark, you know, we also offer that as well. It's not as popular, but sometimes in the summertime when it gets really warm, families do have an interest in getting out after dark on the beach. So it's something to think about as well.
What kind of shark species are we talking for down there? Is hammerhead something that can be caught down there?
Hammerheads are caught down here as the water warms up. They aren't as, you know, prevalent down here. They don't like that real warm water. But our bull sharks and our black tips, mm-hmm. we tend to catch those a lot, you know, in the summertime as it warms up. And then a lot of smaller sharks, too. You catch a lot of, like, spinners and, you know, your Atlantic sharp noses and your black noses, which, you know, those all tend to range only between, like, 2 to 4 feet in length. So they're perfect, again, for when you're fishing with families. You know, kids want to see a shark with teeth, so
seeing of a course. Shark would be scary.
A 5-footer is perfect, you know, for a seven-year-old boy.
Right. So let's talk rates. If somebody wants to book you guys up for a day, or what are your rates? What are your time lengths? You know, let's go through if somebody's interested in hiring you.
Yeah. So our morning charters, our surf charters, they're the most popular, and they are run 4 hours, and they go from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And those are actually $400 with a $150 deposit. We do also offer a morning charter that runs 6 hours, and that just goes from 6 until noon. And that one just goes up to $550 with a $200 deposit. And then the shark charters that we offer, those go from 7 p.m. until 12 midnight, and those are $500 with a $200 deposit.
So very reasonable rates, especially for folks who are going to be, you know, going out of town expecting to pay for things on vacation already. So, yeah, that's definitely within the realm of reasonability, in my opinion, you know.
And one common question I get with a lot of the clients that are booking during the season right now is they always ask, you know, does that, you know, matter for the amount of people? And it doesn't. You know, whether you're a group of 8, you know, a group of 12, you know, I've even done parties last year where it was like an entire youth team. So even if you're a group of, you know, you have a team coming down, like a hockey team or a soccer team, you know, we can even accommodate a large group. You know, something about everyone all being together out there on the beach, you know, we can line up, you know, 7 to 10 rods, and it really entertains, you know, a large group or even a small group. So,
and that's really actually that's very fantastic, I believe, because, you know, a lot of guides, you know, they've got one price for one person, one price for two. You know, you're talking groups of 6 or more, they're going to, you know, double the price. So that, to me, is that's a big selling point, I would say.
And I'll be honest, Cam, for me, truly, the larger groups, it's less pressure on me because they tend to entertain themselves because they're all hanging out, they're all chatting, you know, so I tend to not let a big group add pressure to it. I think it makes them a lot easier.
Well, I mean, I can see that, you know, they're out there to have fun and they all know each other. So it's going to be, you know, I won't say less awkward, but it's going to be more camaraderie between them, you know, so it's going to be a looser atmosphere. That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah.
So if folks are interested in connecting with you guys and setting something up, how can they do that? I know you're, like you said, you do some social media stuff. You got a little bit of influencer stuff going on, you and Marissa both. So what's going to be the best ways? Where can they find your content? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, so we do all of our content through Facebook mainly. I do have a page on Facebook called Justin Hoover Land-Based Fishing. Marissa White also, she posts very regular on Facebook. She has a really good following and a great reach. So if you look up Marissa White, you'll find her on Facebook as well. She's out there every day with me. So whether you contact me or her, you know, we will get you, you know, booked up and all set up. I also do have a cell phone. You know, I use that as well as a regular contact. It's 571-283-9751. And if you call that or text that, I will get right back to you as well.
All right, Justin Hoover, Land-Based Fishing, based out of Pensacola, Florida. If you're looking to do some saltwater fishing this year, they're going to be the folks to give a call. Justin, Marissa, thank you so much for taking the time. And again, Marissa, tell your dad thanks for hooking us up on doing this.
Yes, Cam, and thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah, of course, Cam. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You guys have a wonderful time, and who knows, maybe I'll get a chance to make it down that way and do some fishing with you all eventually.
I would love it.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. You have to come down, and we'll put you on some fish.
I would love that. I really would.
Oh, perfect. I love it.
That's going to wrap it up for HLS this weekend. Don't forget to follow the show on Facebook and YouTube and get all the details online at WJYPAM.com as well. We're also on Spotify, Pandora, and Amazon Music. Thanks so much for listening, and until next weekend, I'll catch you later.
Miss part of today's show? Listen again and catch past shows on the podcast at WJYPAM.com and on the Jock mobile app. This has been Hook, Line, and Sinker with Cam Connors, brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods on the Jock.
Another checkup? Why are so many people getting puppies?
Dr. Kim's veterinary office is littered with cuteness.
We are booked solid for weeks, but who can say no to a puppy, right? Oh, good boy.
She needs to find extra vet techs to get those pups some extra love.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job on Indeed, candidates can find it easier, so you can hire easier. Redeem your $75 credit at Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply.
The more you listen to your kids, the closer you'll be. So we asked kids, what do you want your parents to hear?
I feel sometimes that I'm not listened to. I would just want you to listen to me more often and evaluate situations with me and lead me towards success.
We're not adults, so just be there and like listen. I just want someone to yap to. And I just feel like I'll be fine, like if someone just